Welcome, where business buying banter meets no BS reality. Get ready to dive into the world of buying and selling businesses without the fluff and fancy jargon. Whether you're a seasoned business buying pro or a curious aspiring entrepreneur, this is where the real talk happens. Because in business, there's no room for sugarcoating. Let's get down to the brass tacks.
I love that music. I picked it.
You did?
I did.
Maybe we should have something that you sing.
You know, I picked it. I wanted something that sounded bluesy and rock like Aerosmith, because that's one of my favorite bands.
Well,
now we just got to get Steven Tyler back on the road again for their farewell tour.
Oh, right. What is he in, a rehab, or where is he gone?
A little of both, I think. So, yeah. Hey, you know, bands are a small business, right?
Or they're big business. Yeah.
Yes, they are.
Taylor Swift's tours, I think, grossed $1 billion. So.
Oh, yeah. She's doing a lot for the NFL, too. That's for sure.
Oh, yeah. No doubt. Yeah,
and that's no doubt. Business. They're like, bring it on in. There's an affiliate for us.
Yeah. I mean, I think, think she's great. You know, as far as personality is concerned, I couldn't name one of her songs if you put $100,000 in front of me. But, you know, it only bothers me when during the games, like, okay, you know what, you could, instead of keep cutting to her cheering, you could show a few more replays. Like,
yes.
You know, like this, let's remember what we're here for.
Oh yeah. My Super Bowl should be interesting. I wonder if Usher, I think he's the halftime. I wonder if he'll ask Taylor to sing a song or two at halftime.
Right. Cause she's, I guess, touring in Japan, I read, and then she's flying in for the game. So yeah, I don't know. I think he'll be happy to keep the stage to himself.
Everything's a business, Richard, isn't it?
Everything's a business, and there's a business for every business.
Yes. Well, welcome. It's good to see you. Good
nice to see you,
my friend. I missed you last week Thursday, but you are back.
And thank you. Good to be back. I had a great trip. I think I told you, and anybody listening should look up Regenerative Capital Group. What they're doing, and they're up based in Canada, but what they're doing is unbelievable. We talked about it briefly. They're underwriting five aspiring business buyers, paying them for a year. They had 172 applicants, chose five people, and they're putting them through a rigorous training program. They flew them to Mexico for this boot camp, which was like, I mean, first class, five-star. I mean, the way they took care of everybody was unbelievable. And wow. The founder of Regenerative bought my course a number of years ago. He and his partner started buying some small businesses, and they built it up to over $200 million in revenue and sold out for $100 million. And he's taking part of that because he's such a good guy. And with this other gentleman, Cordell Jacks, and they're underwriting these five people to acquire businesses. So they turned them into Marines. So they brought me in for the educational component, leaving aside the insurance and some of the accounting, mm-hmm. But it was 9 hours of boot camp, and they had all read the course beforehand. And it was great sessions. These are really, really impressive people. And it was a terrific back and forth. And the business part was great and had a lot of fun. It was, they treated us like royalty. It was just incredible.
I am more amazed at the fact, Richard, that it all started with your course. What were they doing before the course? I mean,
one was a small time. Mike was in the financial business years ago, mm-hmm. and then decided was became a little more entrepreneurial. The fellow he brought in, Iggy Domagalski, brought him as a young fellow. Basically did in a different way what he's doing now, which brought him and said, let's look to acquire business. They bought a small company, I think. One of the first ones they bought, I think, was doing like $600,000 in revenue, and brought in and run the business. Then they bought some other similar ones that they amalgamated, not all of them into the fold, but a number of them. I'll have Iggy's actually commentary. I had a long video session with him, testimonial, go on our website. But they started just, you know, putting these pieces of businesses together. They're obviously very good operators. And it's great because, you know, with everything still says, you know, when he talks about it, he says, your course, How to Buy a Good Business at a Great Price, is the Bible. It's our Bible. It's timeless. He still uses the same seller questions, still uses, negotiating pieces. I mean, there's just a huge component. He says that's their Bible when they're still buying mm-hmm. businesses. So it's unbelievably gratifying. I play just a little role, these guys, you know, obviously, but it's really gratifying to see what, you know, you put down words in a program and look what it leads to for these guys, and you can't find nicer people. So the whole story is terrific.
I love it. And what a great segue for today's episode. I mean, putting together a team for your business buy side, and you were part of that team right out of the get-go for them. And you're still their team all these years later. on the buyer side, right, Richard? You
on the buy side.
On the buy side, which for me, my biggest frustration, and for those of you listening who are aspiring business buyers thinking about going on this journey, you're going to be a searcher, and we'll talk about searchfunder.com a little bit. Start forming your team before you start searching. That's what I got to say. Would you agree?
Yeah. And you know, it's so crazy to me because I do some sell side representation. Very often when I meet, you know, a prospective client, or they become an engaged client, and we go through who their attorney and who their accountant is. And oftentimes, you know, they say, yeah, I have an attorney. And it's their, I've mentioned this before, you know, it's their brother and sister-in-law, the patent attorney. And I say, that won't work. We need an M&A attorney. And they're always, yeah, I get it. You know, that makes perfect sense. And we make sure the accountant, sometimes they're working with a smaller accountant. It's not the right firm for a transaction. And we say, yeah, we engage a bigger firm. And they're always amenable. I never, ever, ever get pushback on the sell side. It comes to the buy side. It's like people's brains drop out of their head when they're thinking about this. I don't know why they think that they could either do it on their own, or they don't put enough value into their team as far as an accountant, attorney, such as yourself, and you know, or an advisor, mentor on the buy side. It just blows my mind that there's not the same level of understanding. Mm-hmm. The buy side that the sell side understands. People jump in, well, you know, and a lot of that plays into the fact that, you know, 94% of the people who begin to search to buy a business never buy one. You know, I always put over 90%, but it's actually 94% is the exact number. And they just don't put their team together. And yes, 100%, you got to do this at the beginning. Doesn't mean you have to hire them, pay them, engage them, retain them, but you have to at least know who they are.
And right on.
Rolling in the conversation going. And that includes, you know, someone such as yourself, who said the legal and financial piece and buyer advisory side.
Yeah. There's a lot of confusion out there as well on the buy side. It has been for years. The difference between a small business transaction versus a middle market transaction. I've seen buyers come to the table with middle market corporate attorneys that represent the large transactions, and they charge a lot of money for their work, and they're engaged by a small business buyer. It's like, wait a minute. And then the total opposite, I've seen buyers just use a legal template that the seller side provided. Maybe the seller broker said, just use this
template. Or they found it online.
Yeah. I mean, you get from one spectrum to the other. I don't think there's any in between out there. And somehow, Richard, we have got to change this market and shake it up a bit, because quite frankly, I'm tired of buyers coming to these transactions completely unprepared and not knowing where to go. And the seller side, I could say the same too in the small business spectrum. So where should we start? I mean, as your course teaches, like the investment firm that you just flew out and did a presentation for them, what is the first thing that your course is telling people to do?
Well, if we're going to keep the subject matter consistent with the buying team, you know, one of the points you mentioned, you're better off to err on the side of having too many brains at the table than not enough. So if someone happens to hire a firm that's a little out of the league per se, related to the size of the transaction, so a big law firm relative to a small acquisition, well, that's certainly much better than a small firm for the wrong size acquisition. So always err on the side of brains is what I tell people.
Yeah.
You can never have enough brain power at the table on your side, whether you're a buyer or a seller, that for your accountant, your attorney, an advisor such as yourself. So where they should start is, if they don't understand, they're going to need an attorney, they're going to need an accountant. The rule of thumb related to attorneys, you don't sign, send, or submit any legal documents without it having to be reviewed by an attorney. Mm-hmm. And so get them on board. You can have the discussions without retaining them. Tell them you're looking to buy a business. Here's the size. Do you work on deals that size? Perhaps they don't. Maybe it's another firm that they'll recommend. But get them teed up. You don't necessarily have to engage them and pay them a retainer, but get them teed up and ready. And the same thing with the accountant. Make sure, you know, ideally you want an attorney who's done work in the sector that you're looking to acquire potentially, especially if it's specialized, if there's, you know, IP or environmental issues, but making sure it's the right attorney. And again, you don't have to give them money and have a retainer if you're just at the beginning of the search. Similarly with an accounting firm, to make sure that they're and understand their schedule with an accounting firm, because when it comes to certain tax periods or end of quarters, accountants are beyond belief busy, every accounting firm. So if all of a sudden you're going to turn to them to due diligence, you know, at the, you know, in September 15th, when they have to submit all the extended filings for corporate returns, they're not going to have any time for you. So make sure you understand what their schedule is going to be like. And the same thing, are they, you know, are they familiar with this type of business? Get their cost. You can meet with several, see who you're most comfortable with, but get them teed up. And as it relates to the financing side with someone such as yourself, you know, just give you, you know, sound like a good down and dirty plug for Deb Curtis, but the reality is, you know, you don't wait until you have a deal to figure out where the hell you're getting the money. And so getting someone on board such as yourself, that you do immediately.
Yeah.
Because the financing is going to take time. It's not like a phone call to an attorney and say, we're ready to go. Send me the engagement agreement. You've got work to do. You got them to pre-qualify. You've got to let them know the criteria. So that piece of the equation for advisors is immediate. And then the knowledgeable piece, whether it's related knowledge related to buying, you know, on the advisory side, you know, I've been teaching and preaching people, you know, before you get going, get informed, be knowledgeable.
Yeah.
You know, right. I had one, you mentioned search funder, saw a post the other day, someone was talking about an LOI and the response was something like, you know, just, you know, put in whatever you want. It's non-binding. And that's complete full of shit, because an LOI can be binding. It depends what's in there. And, you know, maybe after we cover this point, we could talk a little bit more about the search funder type of websites of the world. But
yeah,
you got to get that, you got to get your people in place immediately. Doesn't mean you have to start spending money, but from the get-go, that's your team. You want them in place.
That's right. I'd like to add that regarding talking with attorneys and before engaging them, I've seen some buyers come to me for financing and they already engage the attorney and put down a deposit.
Yep.
And then they show me the listing and we don't have anything. We don't, it's not a qualified business that will pass bank financing. And you already put money down on an attorney, which I get it, but check first where the, like you said earlier, where's the capital coming from? How do you know where it's coming from? And not all banks are created equal.
Right. Yeah, they're not all created equal, and some deals can't go back. A lot of them can't go bank financing. So how are you going to go about doing it? There are other avenues, but understand you don't wait till the 11th hour to figure out the financing. And that's what becomes so problematic with some of these buyers is people have this, you know, either their complete lack of knowledge or delusion that the banks are just going to open up the vaults and write them checks to make this acquisition. And you see it especially on the sites like a search funder where you have these are unfunded searchers. I mean, they give them the name searcher. I mean, let's call it what it is. They're a business buyer. I mean, they're, you know, they gave themselves a fancy name, which is fine. But, you know, if you have, you've never bought a business, you have no knowledge, you have no track record, you have no expertise, you have no experience, who's financing you? Okay. And then you get onto some of these forums where you have all these people with no knowledge, no expertise, no experience, no track record, no nothing. And they're dispensing, receiving, and submitting and accepting advice from the same group community that's got no experience, no knowledge, no expertise, no track record. And so it's like, you know, it's a turning into a shit show. You're getting, you know, the amount of misinformation, wrong guidance is, it's just crazy. It's like the blind leading the blind.
You said it best. It is a shit show.
It's a shit show.
I've gone on that platform and seen some replies that buyers pose questions and the replies are just, my head just spins at what I see. I'm like, where are they coming up with this? And it's either left or right. I mean, it's all over the hell.
It's certainly not bullseye. Now, you know, it is a terrific platform. I will say that. I mean, there's a lot of value for members in there. And I've spent a lot of time on there more recently than before. I mean, there is a lot of value and people can, you know, put together some good connections, but understand, take advice from believable parties.
Right on.
Right. You know, it's so, and that's where I see that becoming a really dangerous path when you're starting to take advice from people who are completely, you know, incapable. They just don't have the track record to be providing advice. It's like two people standing outside the mechanic shop. Both their cars are in the shop and they're each diagnosing each other's cars. And neither one of them knows anything more than to get in and put in and drive. Like find believable parties in financing, like yourself and attorneys and accountants, the best possible people you can afford, because this is what's going to help you get to the finish line.
That's right. There was one question posed on the platform and I went against the norm as to what my thoughts were on the answer. And the buyer reached out to me separately and thanked me because everyone was going with the grain, which was, in my opinion, the wrong answer. And I was vulnerable. I knew because, you know, there's a lot of men in this space, not too many women. And I knew this girl coming in into the thread, throwing her feedback would probably raise some eyebrows. And well, you know what? The buyer was smart enough to contact me and thank because he recognized that the advice that I gave was exactly what he was thinking about.
Yeah, because it probably makes sense and they want it from you're the believable party. And you brought up the point related to women. You know, years ago, when I went into the buy side of this in my program, my clients used to be like 95% male. Mm-hmm. Now it's about 70-30 male to female. And I will tell you, okay, and I don't like, I'm not a general, like I don't like to throw out these general statements, okay? Mm-hmm. But I will tell you that women, by and large, much better business buyers. Not even close. No, and it's true. And I'm not just saying it because you're on the call. We're out here together. It's, and I've seen it repeatedly. And I think it's probably because a lot of the women that are looking to potentially buy businesses, they know they're going into the world, like the world of finance. It's the world of like the old boys network, right? Exactly. And there's going to be a lot of men around the table. And so, you know, I'm not so sure, let's say they're being looked at a little differently. Maybe that is the case, but they're fighting this forever. And so what they do to combat that is they just make sure that they bolster their skill set and equip themselves with as much knowledge as possible so that they go in and there's never a question about whether or not they should be sitting at the table. It's no doubt. I mean, and again, I don't want to be such a generalist about it, but any one of my female consulting clients over the years have been more methodical from the acquisition of knowledge and the constant questioning and of, am I doing this the right way? And I don't think it's not from insecurity. It's from understanding that, you know what, there sometimes, you know, females start in second place, just the real world where the way people look at within the world of commerce, because it's so male dominated. And so they solve for that by making sure they ramp up their knowledge base quickly. And they go into this as a much better prepared buyer. And I've seen it over and over again.
Yeah, I think it's their due diligence. They ask more questions. They're not embarrassed to ask any question.
No.
I find that too, which is good.
Wow. Oh, it's great.
It is great. And they're great. I think it's the mama bear in them, Richard, that, you know, women typically are mama bears and, you know, we are moms, or we were obviously, you know, children, and we've seen mom taking care of us. We're just a little bit different on how we look at things. Probably I would say women move a bit slower for the right reasons, where men want to move a lot faster to get the deal done and just make the money.
Yeah. I mean, could very well be, or they're just smarter, you know, just ask my ex-wife, she'll tell you that.
We like to spend money though too, so we want to make the money.
Don't even go there, please.
my
wife is like, she runs a title office in Boca Raton for a big firm out of your area of the woods, Knight Barry. And, you know, she's 100% self-sufficient, pays her bills, her car. She wants a nicer car, whatever. She takes care of everything. So it's as equal as it gets. So there could not say that shot to my wife at all.
Oh boy. So do we have any questions that have come through yet?
I'll look at put on my glasses and see. Raquel probably has a question.
Yes.
Yeah.
Nope. Raquel's, thank you for being here, Raquel. We really appreciate you.
Most of the time, she says, a good observation that most of the time we fail to do our own due diligence. Yeah. Well, if it's related to self-assessment, you're probably correct. Yeah.
For sure. So Search
Women Funder. Safeguard. Yes, Search Fund. Let's go.
Let's talk about Search Funder. I think it is a great platform. There's a lot of mixed bag transactions from the high end to the low end. I think more high end, though. Would you agree?
I don't know. I mean, I thought that originally too, but as I started looking at, I mean, I must have looked at 100 posts or questions, and I see a lot on the lower end. What I think the initial perception is because there's a disproportionate amount of people with fancy degrees, and I don't shit on any degree. It's nice if you've got a, you know, an Ivy League degree and an MBA. I mean, I don't know how much value it brings you to this process, but I think you get a preconceived notion that it's a higher end business, but there's a lot of lower market businesses. I mean, they're not institutional buyers. You know, to me, I'd say that the vast majority of them are businesses, certainly $10 million and under, and plenty of them lower than that.
Yeah. I'm just going to give a quick answer. Jack Cox in our thread here asked, what is the platform we're talking about? Searchfunder.com. Just
and
as it sounds.
Funds like that, that they're related to search funds. They're buyers, you know, the community of prospective business buyers. Search Funder is probably the most prominent one, but there are some other ones as well, I guess,
yeah.
That are, you know, that have some, that those type of communities.
Mm-hmm.
So, and Jack, there's a lot of advisors on that as well. People such as Deb, myself, et cetera.
Actually, no S at the end, searchfunder.com.
Yes.
That's the right website, searchfunder.com. And I have seen everything from SBA lenders to private equity firms to people looking for an investment partner because they want to buy the business and be the manager, the operator on site. I mean, there's just a mixed bag of all kinds of opportunities on that platform. So there is a lot of value and you can learn a lot, but just understand where are you obtaining the source of your learning from.
100%. That's exactly it. It's this, right. It's this believable party syndrome. They're going back and forth about SBA loans. I saw one the other day when they were talking about earnouts and it was a component to deal. And one person was talking about the SBA allows it. Another one says they don't allow it. A third one was telling them how to structure it to make sure it passes the SBA. And I wanted to tell them, hey, time out, idiots. Just let's stop here for a second. Okay. You're not going to dictate to the lenders how things work. That I could guarantee you. The lender is going to tell you how they work and every lender is different. So, you know, what would be much better off is ask the question to someone like yourself and you'd set the record straight as to what is true.
That's right.
You know, and so there's just so much, there's just a lot of, you know, there's a lot of speculation. There's a lot of misinformation. And again, I don't want to appear like I'm shitting on this website because it is a terrific platform, but you know, the underlying theme that we're talking about here ties to what we're talking about, you know, get your information from the right people, mm-hmm. If it's financing, if it's business advisory, if it's accounting, if it's legal, get your advice from the right people. You know, if you have a toothache, don't go to the shoemaker. So if you go to the dentist, and so that's where this goes off the rails,
right?
And you know, just get your advice from believable parties.
And just because the SBA SOP, Standard Operating Procedures, tells you so on earnouts, because there have been some changes as of the new release last fall, doesn't mean the bank you're working with is going to approve it and agree with what the SBA says.
Right.
The new changes that came out in fall with SBA SOP, the banks can say, no, we don't want to do it that way. Some banks and some of the new changes, I agree with them. I wouldn't want to do it that way either if I was giving out 90% capital on a transaction that's unsecured.
Right. It's unsecured. Right? Right. And you know what? I think people should understand the SOP is the guidelines of which what they're allowed to do, mm-hmm. but it doesn't mean that they're going to do it. These are the things that they're allowed to do, but every lender is different. I mean, how many times have you stated that, you know, and you're right.
We're talking SOP. I get a little choked
up. You know, you get all fuck, as they say on SNL, all fucklemmed. You get all choked up. So, but, you know, you've made the point so often that, you know, being able to understand and diagnose the buyer and the business, you're able to direct people to the lender that, or the lenders,
that's lenders right.
that are most likely going to accept that scenario, that buyer and that business. But it doesn't mean they all will by any means. So the scope of, you know, this what do you call it? The standard operating procedures.
Uh-huh.
I keep thinking scope of work, but standard operating, those are parameters. Yes. If one bank can do all that and the SBA will underwrite it, but doesn't mean that they're all going to do it. And they all don't do it. So, I mean, that's the thing, right? Nothing. You don't have it. I imagine you don't have everyone who complies with every, it's got to, you know, it's got to be a 10 out of 10 buyer, a 10 out of 10 business. And still that doesn't mean they may have their own internal rules.
That's right. And then there are the SOP guidelines that the banks must follow. And if the deal goes bad, they lose their guarantee.
Right.
If the bank didn't follow. And as crazy as it sounds, there are some banks that will take a little shortcut to get a deal done, depending upon the relationship or what have you.
Right.
No rhyme or reason in business acquisition lending.
Not at all. Let's talk about, if we can, for the attorneys and accountants piece of things.
Please.
So, you know, my position has always been, we talked about it earlier, you know, a few things that you should have in place. Meet with them early. Referrals are wonderful, especially if it's someone who has sold a business. Not every accountant or every attorney is going to be qualified to do your deal. Mm-hmm. And so some of the things, understanding, of course, their fees, any experience within similar related industries. Mm-hmm. Sometimes they're valuable assets. Sometimes an attorney can recommend an accountant and vice versa. Have they done any work in this particular industry? What size business? Is there any specialty? If it's a more complex business with certain components, like you need multiple leases or anything environmental or the like, you typically need a larger firm where they have the resources in-house. That's part of it. So again, it's a level of experience, familiarity. And you also want to know that the attorneys have been people that do transaction law and their goal is to get the deal to the finish line, that they're deal makers and not deal breakers. Every attorney will tell you they're a deal maker, not a deal breaker, but you'll find out very quickly on in the conversation if they're dominant. You don't want someone who's, you want them to impart their wisdom and recommendation, but they're not the negotiator. You don't want them negotiating the deal, the buyer and seller negotiate the deal, and the attorney is a scribe. They put down on paper what the buyer and seller have agreed to, and over and above that, put legal clauses in place to make sure your ass is covered and also may bring some other awareness to you. The accountant is someone who'll do the due diligence, but will also make sure the entity structure is right and will look at certain things to make sure when they do their due diligence to make sure that they've done this before on this size business, that they're very thorough. They know what to look for, what issues they may be, because they'll help validate the information, the financial information. One thing I've told people, you know, when you get the first financial package, if it doesn't make sense to you as the buyer, sure as hell ain't going to make sense to the accountant. So you review it first yourself, and you don't want to have to keep going to them to look at the P&Ls. Tell me what this looks like. What are your comments? Because accountants typically value businesses, you know, from a balance sheet, and small businesses are valued based on the income statement, tax return. And so, you know, those in getting your team together, interview a lot of accountants, you know, 3-4 accountants, attorneys, recommendations are great, but make sure that you're compatible with them. Okay.
Yeah.
And then there's, you know, and you want people that are going to help you get to the finish line. There's always an element of risk. You don't want to be so crazy and neurotic about it that you can never get a deal done because you know, the attorney keeps telling you, oh, I'd never do this. Attorneys typically, you know, some attorneys want to win every point, and that's not the case. A good transaction attorney understands you're pulling levers. It's a give and take, and some things you have to agree to, other ones to let you know what your risk is and whether or not you're prepared to live with that. But you, the buyer, you know, you drive the train.
That's right. And I would like to add in about the attorneys as well. If you are going to use the SBA as the buyer and have a bank loan backed by the SBA, make sure your attorney, number one, knows SBA, and number two, wants to take on your transaction knowing that it is a loan backed by the SBA.
Yes. Because
there have been some attorneys out there that I have seen and heard, when they hear SBA, they're like, I don't want to do anything with that. It's a headache.
Right. Yeah. They think it's a headache or it's overwhelming. Jody asked the question, is it okay to ask for references when selecting advisors? Jody, I'm glad you're on this call because yes, 100%. And I should have mentioned that you absolutely want to get references. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And especially, I mean, ideally, if they have someone who had someone in a similar situation, business size or what have you, or type of industry, yes, there's no fear. You know, I understand the intimidation. Someone who's dealt with attorney, go to fancy office, sometimes nice old wood paneling, maybe it's a little, you know, it can be intimidating, but that sort of ties into, you, the buyer, you control this deal. And yes, absolutely 100% ask for references, unless it's, you know, the referral is someone who you trust implicitly and said, I've used this person to buy X number of business. Like one of the, you know, there's a few accounting firms that I use down here in South Florida, have done for all my transactions. You know, I would recommend them to anybody and say, if, you know, as long as they trusted me, I say, you don't need references. These are terrific people. I mean, one guy did 20 transactions with, but yes, ask for references by all means. Anybody who won't provide them, run.
There you go. I had a short list of buyer representation attorneys, and there was one fella on the list that I had referred to over the years, and he was really, really good. He worked for a firm, did a great job, understood SBA, loved the guy. Then he went out on his own. He left the firm he worked for to start up his own firm, and it just got messy. And then he got delayed, and then there were some personal issues at home, which slowed things down. And I had to pull him off the list, Richard. He was slowing my transactions down, and the buyers were disappointed. If I'm going to recommend anybody, you better be good. And if I get any feedback that something has changed, you're coming off the list.
Yeah. And you know what? And it's also important, you know, to that point is sometimes you get in bed with an attorney, they're not getting the job done, they're too slow. And I'm not saying just, you know, brushing every attorney with this paintbrush or whatever, but or tarring every attorney with this brush, which is, you know, sometimes it's not right and you find out early enough and you have to find someone else.
That's right.
You know, what you don't want to do, where I find that always happens, not with accountants. Accountants typically, you know, they've been well-trained in auditing. They've been well-trained in due diligence. They understand entity structure, tax structure, and that pretty much repeats itself firm to firm, even a smaller firm. I mean, that's the core skill set, you know, of an accountant. Attorneys on the other side, you get a lot of these door attorneys. You know what a door attorney is?
Tell us, Richard.
A door attorney is, they practice law of whatever walks through the door, right? That's a door attorney. And it's,
I love it.
And it's common. So you want a transactional attorney, right? That's their skill set. That's what they do. They may be too large for you, but you want a transactional attorney. They know the paperwork. They know what has to be done. They know the documentation. They know the issues to look for. You want a transactional attorney, not a door attorney. I remember there's one attorney down here.
Good.
I mean, it seemed like every couple of years there was new signage on her building, right? Like when the foreclosures were busy, it was foreclosures. Then it was lawsuits against some, you know, some publicly listed companies. It was like, it's typically the door attorney.
You don't want one of those. For sure. I do want to toss in quick as we're wrapping up our time here, another advisor on your team, if you're a buyer and you're obtaining bank financing backed by the SBA, is the life insurance piece, which always will slow down a transaction if your front-end lender is not educating you to get the ball rolling on the policy that's going to cover the unsecured portion of your SBA loan. And everybody assumes going to my American Family agent or State Farm agent that I've been doing my personal and business insurance with for over 20 years is the answer, and they're going to be the fastest, and I'm just going to call them and it's going to happen. It doesn't work that way. It just doesn't work that way. You have to make sure you're finding agents that understand how to put a collateral assignment on the policy and the SBA parameters around it. And it has to be fast, because some of these big companies, Richard, they can take months. If it's a $2 million policy, there's going to be blood drawn and health questions and searches done on the health of the borrower. And
so that's the borrower. So just so I understand, the unsecured portion of an SBA loan has to have a matching life insurance policy on the borrower.
That is correct. And it
so that way it doesn't the obligation doesn't transfer to their estate. It's paid off in the event of their death.
That's right. Exactly. The banks want that protection. Some banks, it just depends upon the underwriter. They may call for the whole loan amount, even if there is some collateral. Other banks will look at the unsecured portion and condition it to be the unsecured amount. Again,
get started early.
Every bank's different.
Yeah. So you got to get that process started early. Absolutely.
Yes. Yeah.
All right. I think we're done with questions, Ms. Deb. This was really engaging and great. How do you approach unconventional or challenging situations during the acquisition process? Well, Racky, that's probably about 10 shows combined, right? because they're, and, but I think that's probably a good subject for one of our next ones to maybe pull a bunch of examples, and maybe she could send us some direct message of some specific examples, but I think maybe it would be a good show pulling out some examples of challenges that have happened that people don't anticipate. Well, it's all the challenges, always stuff you don't anticipate, but stuff that have come up in situations where, you know, how do you navigate your way around? That's probably a great question.
That is a great question. I think of life insurance. The borrower forgot to get the ball rolling, or the American Family agent, we're on month two and we still don't have a policy assigned. What do we do? Well, I have contacts that will put it together quickly and put a policy in place within a couple of days. Will your premium be a little bit higher? Probably, because you're paying for
it. Yeah, but that's okay. And the other thing, buddy, when you're talking about insurance, reps and warranty insurance, which usually only was reserved for very large deal. When you have a purchase agreement with a seller, there's clauses related to representations and warranties that the seller makes, that you're both making to one another related to things that you've said or documents you've provided. It's called reps and warranties, and I urge people to learn more about that. But you can get insurance for reps and warranties that cover any breaches in the reps and warranty. It used to only be for big deals. Now you could do it for much smaller deals as well. I have one terrific contact, actually, one above all the other ones, who's really good. If anybody needs that, to let me know. But that's another thing you want to start early, because as soon as my understanding that as soon as you have an LOI and the financials, they can get to work and they turn it around quickly, but they need that documentation. So it's something that, you know, a seller, buyers look at it, sellers look at it, to really think about, because in most cases, the cost for that insurance is really inconsequential relative to the potential issues that could arise if there is a breach in the reps, representations and warranties.
Wow.
In America, there's a business for every business. You write a deal, you have reps and warranty, now you have reps and warranty insurance. And I'm sure there's a law firm in America that specializes in nothing but suing rep and warranty insurance companies. You know, there's a business for business.
That should have been the title of this episode. We started it with there's a business for every business, and we're ending it that way. It is so true.
Amen to that. You're the best.
I keep hearing from you as we're going to wrap up the show here. I've got contacts. I have contacts too. We've been doing this, Richard, for a long time. And we've seen the good, the bad, and everything in between.
Yes, indeed.
And that is where buyers need to slow down, get connected with Richard or myself, or, you know, somebody that you know that you can get references on, that you are comfortable that they've been doing this for a while and they're going to set you up the right way before you start your search. Before.
Absolutely. The connections and just having the credibility of those references, and certainly anybody who has specific requests, I mean, by all means can get in touch with you or myself. And even if it's not someone, you know, that may not be within the jurisdiction of what we're familiar with, someone needs an attorney in Virginia who I may not know, but if they can provide some background and people that they've spoken to, you and I can both help them make sure that they get to the right people of questions to ask or whatever. I have a whole chapter in the course related to hiring professionals and questions you need to ask. And I'm sure when you know, someone's asking you for a reputable attorney related to closing a transaction with or without SBA, I'm sure you can give them, you know, very specific people that you would use.
Absolutely. I know exactly great point. What it would be. Yeah. And that's another topic, another episode. The various laws in all the states, that's a whole nother can of worms. Woohoo!
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
And they differ. Maybe we'll bring one on as a guest.
Yes. That's actually a great idea. And I think, you know, some of the geographical differences would be very important. The good news for buyers is, you know, by and large, the transactions and the processes repeat themselves very closely state to state. There are certain things with bulk sales taxes or other issues, you know, that can be geographically specific. And that's why you want someone who's done a transaction in that area, or at least be vetted. If you have a decent enough size firm, even if they're outside the area, they have generally counsel that they can lean on within a certain state or what have you. And again, it all circles back to getting the right team, the right advisors, the right professionals.
You got it. Yeah, there are searches on the subject business to be acquired. Searches as far as like tax liens, payrolls, stuff like that. And in every state, it's a different place to go to get those certificates that have to be collected and reviewed by the underwriter and cleared that it's approved and we can close. Oh my God, I can tell you stories about.
Oh yeah, no, it's huge. And there's that sales tax issue. I guess the next issue where you have to charge tax in certain states over a certain amount of revenue, and a lot of companies haven't done it. And there's clawbacks, and buyers have to be aware of that because that doesn't expire, and so that can come back to bite them in the ass. So all these things, I mean, we could list a laundry list of potential issues. They can all be solved for.
Yes.
All of them.
With the right team.
But you have to be aware of them. And if so, if you're not knowledgeable about the process and you don't surround yourself with the right people, I guarantee you're going to go about 150 miles an hour into a brick wall head first.
That's a great way to close out the show, Richard. I mean, seriously, I want to see everybody listening to what his words just were, because most of you searchers out there are doing it too fast and getting swooped up on the wrong side of the transaction, giving you recommendations on what to do and where to go. Start with the people on your side. That's where you got to start. Then go search.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know what, the other thing is what they teach in business school has nothing to do with buying a business.
Yeah.
That's the reality. And I don't, I've met a lot of brilliant people with MBAs and graduate degrees, but the reality is, in some cases, just because you're highly educated doesn't mean you know shit about acquiring a business. I mean, that's just the reality. So, dedicate yourself with the same vigor that you put into your schooling to learn about the process, and then you turn yourself into a superpower.
Mm-hmm. I love it.
Well, all right, Ms. Deb.
I think we wrapped it up here in good timing. 40 minutes, just over a little bit here. And we got another one coming up next Thursday, 2 p.m. Eastern, streaming live on all your favorite social channels. Richard, you are the best.
You can't say that because that was my line to you. I the last couple of weeks have been disjointed and been traveling, whatever, so we've only spoken on the shows versus in between. I love spending time with you. Your wealth of knowledge. You're great. You're fun. You're smart as hell. And your heart is in the right place to help people. And how crazy I am about you.
I feel the same about you. You make me smile. I missed you last week, so I'm glad to have you back.
It's good to be back.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, thank you for listening in, and tune in next Thursday, 2 p.m. We'll be back.
See you later.